Welcome to the Commonwealth Club. I'm George Hammond, chair of the Humanities Forum, which organized tonight's event. I'm happy to welcome our live audience here in San Francisco and our online and radio audiences. It's my pleasure to introduce Michael Hammond, a teacher in the music public education system in Berkeley, and he is going to speak about why music education didn't disappear. For those of you outside of California that aren't aware of it, there was a law passed as a tax revolt law that cut back on the funding of California schools decades ago, and there were all kinds of different reactions to that because it left no money for the arts, for music education, the sort of frills of education, as they're called sometimes, but really are at the heart of educating a human being as well. And Berkeley had a very interesting reaction to that, as it's not too surprising. So Michael will be talking about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. Thank you, the Commonwealth Club, for having a music teacher in your midst. At first, when I was offered the opportunity to give this presentation, I respectfully declined. And then I realized that it might be the first time in my life that I have 45 minutes of silence where I can just talk to people and explain some ideas that I have. Recently, Berkeley was voted by the NAMM Society one of the best musical communities in public education. And it was quite an honor for us. I'm looking out at the audience right now, and at least half of our team is here supporting this. But it was quite an honor to be recognized for some of the magic that happens in the school district. And I thought the way that I would best kind of interpret how we got there to one of the best musical communities is to kind of go in chronological order with my own life in Berkeley. I grew up in Berkeley, so I think I'll start there. In 1978, which used to be not that long ago, but it keeps getting longer and longer, I was born in a house around the corner from La Peña Musical Cultural Center. And La Peña and Ashkenaz were some of my first memories. I think rumor has it that my first show was to, I saw Dexter Gordon in Utero. I don't remember it, though, but I'm sure he was swinging and a little bit behind the beat. 1978, two major events happened for music education. The first, I was born. And the second, Proposition 13 made its way into California. My understanding of Proposition 13 is that California went from, in the 60s, one of the best public education systems in the country, to by the time I was going through the Berkeley Public Schools, 48th. I think that shows what can happen when funding is cut for things like music. And I'm going to try to explain why I think that's the case. So I grew up in a town that honored culture, honored music. One of my first memories was at Ashkenaz dancing around as a four-year-old, and Hugh Masekela, seeing me, asks me to come up on the stage and play a talking drum with him. And I didn't know who it was. I shook hands with Bishop Tutu. I didn't know who that was. It was one of these towns where you just were... It's expected to have extraordinary experiences. And I did, but I don't think I realized it at the time. And just as an aside, I was thinking about all the different ways I was going to talk about the music program tonight. I got very creative in my mind. I thought about doing a one-man acting show where I could show you what it's like to be a music teacher. But I have no acting experience, so I decided not to do that. So there I was with Hugh Masekela as a four-year-old playing the talking drum, and it felt good. It felt right. I think at that time in my life, I was supposed to be on that stage. I'd worked really hard at enjoying music, and so there I was. And I think that memory kind of sparked something. I noticed the crowd. I noticed how into it everybody was. I noticed how happy the musicians were. I noticed how the rules kind of changed. Like, you know, four-year-olds aren't usually part of an adult world, but when it came to music, and especially, you know, music of West Africa, everybody's a part of the musical experience. And I think that was kind of a pivotal point for me. And so when my dad signed me up for piano lessons at five, as you could expect, I flourished at not wanting to go to piano lessons. I had no desire. Please thank you for staying with me, because I'm thinking of the end of where I'm going, but it's going to go on for a little while like this. But there's a point to why I'm up here talking about my own life so much. So piano didn't go well for me. I was confused by it. You had to use two hands. You had so much going on. And that was okay. It's one of my beliefs, or I was raised to believe, that you don't have to be great at everything. You just have to try things. You have to be exposed to things so that you learn from them. And at five, I was not great at piano. So I left piano and went on to pursuing more useful things, like the Karate Kid kicks and things that, you know, 5 and 6 year olds want to do. I made my way to LeConte with my Michael Jackson jacket as a kindergartner, and I was ready to be the next dancing sensation. After that, I kept going, and they had a recorder class at LeConte, I remember, in kindergarten, and it met, I think, maybe four times, and it was cool. I liked it, but that wasn't permanent, and it went away, and that was the second ending of my music career with recorder. And then I went over to Washington, and there was no music program. There was a gentleman who taught after school named Larry, and we thought maybe we should try piano again, because I didn't excel at it the first time with Larry. So Larry was nice, and I still didn't do very well at piano in third grade. So here I am. That was my third chance to become great at music, and I did not. So what happens next? That's it. That's the end of the story, right? There's no other music going on at Washington. There was a very cool environmental yard. There were cookies being baked in sun ovens on the playground. But I didn't know that, like, Duke Ellington had showed up there on that playground and played 20 years ago. I didn't know any of the history. There wasn't anybody really aware of that in the 80s. And after third grade, I stopped going to the public schools. I went to a Catholic school in Berkeley for a few years, and that's where I actually really started to get music in my life. There was a woman, Pat Crossan, who came in twice a week. It was a pull-out program, and that's where I really kind of found a clarinet and found my voice on that. I also was lucky. There was a happy coincidence at that school, because a group called the Bay Area Wind Symphony rehearsed on Thursday nights in our auditorium there. And I finally had found an instrument that I could kind of do well on, the clarinet. So this was my fifth attempt at music. I got it. I liked the clarinet. I still remember the first time I discovered a clarinet under a friend's bed at, like, a sleepover, and woke up the whole house at 6:30 in the morning trying it out. And his mom was so nice. She said, "That sounds like jazz. Good job." And I was like, "Yes, I'm going to be a jazz clarinet player." Is that what this is called? Yeah, clarinet. So, right, this is fifth grade. And I think one thing that my parents did that was really wise was they said, "Okay, so he found his instrument. He seems to enjoy it. Let's get him involved in other things." So there was a camp called Casadero Music Camp, and I would go up there for a few weeks in the summer, and, you know, meet people like Digital Underground and Josh Jones and pretty much the top people in the music industry at the camp. And I got to see just people doing what they loved. And I got to meet a bunch of kids who really loved music too. And I think that that was huge. That was huge for me to keep wanting to do it. Because at a certain point, music can get hard. Imagine that. And what's going to motivate you to get through those hard parts is the community that you align yourself with. All right, where am I? Fifth grade? I'm going to speed up. So in the summer of fifth grade, no. So the Bay Area Wind Symphony was an organization that went 7th grade to 12th grade. And in 7th grade, I joined that group. And the thing that was amazing about that experience was that I was around all these high school students who were applying to college, who were really smart and really amazing people. I'm still friends with some of them on Facebook, if that counts. And I think that that showed me the next step, right? I'm a seventh grader already seeing people in high school applying to college and understanding that's just what you do, right? That's what they did. And why wouldn't I do that? I think that was huge. The other thing that that group did was we got to travel. So we got year two, I'm in going into eighth grade, and we spent the summer in Australia. And the way that group organized it was you would stay at people's homes. And I got to meet a bunch of other eighth graders from Australia and see what their life was like and play duets and play music with them. And in around eighth grade, I realized that I wanted to go back into the Berkeley public schools. I wanted to go to Berkeley High, and I wanted to have some friends. So as you can imagine, when I went to Willard in eighth grade, I was received with open arms from all the eighth graders, right? Because nobody had formed any cliques or anything like that. And no, I guess it was a little bit rough now that I remember. I saw quickly there was one other kid standing by himself in penny loafers who definitely was tucking in his shirt, so he must not have been from Berkeley. And I ran up to him, and we became good friends. He was from Texas. So he also played music, and that's, at the time, that was my first kind of realization that there was something in the Berkeley public schools that was going to work for me as far as a musician, and that was the jazz program. In the high school, I'd never played jazz before, but I knew that whatever was the top musical thing I could do, that's what I wanted to shoot for. And I think that kids need that. They need something that motivates them to work harder than anybody expects. And I think for me, music was that. And I wanted to be a jazz musician right around eighth grade, not because I knew anything about jazz, but because I knew that I liked music, and that Berkeley High Jazz Ensemble had had some kind of magic to it. It had produced some of the top jazz talent that's out there, and I wanted to be a part of that. But I found out that they don't take clarinets, or they didn't at that time. You had to play a saxophone and double on clarinet. So I decided to learn the saxophone. And I got to Berkeley High, and this is 94. So just to go back now to the Berkeley Public School history a little bit, when I was looking at the Sun Cookies at Washington, not realizing that Duke Ellington had been there, this was when kind of the budget cuts from Proposition 13 were really hurting the schools. And this is when the voters in Berkeley decided to tax themselves in 86 with the BSEP, which is the Berkeley Berkeley Schools Excellent Program. And what they wanted to do was supply some of the funds that weren't getting to the students because of Proposition 13. But music wasn't a part of that original plan. That was in 1986, and there was a good 8 years still before music got attached to that tax in 94. So in 94, when I'm starting at the high school and wanting to be a jazz musician, this tax is now going into full effect to start really building on the music program. Of course, at that time, I wasn't aware of any of this. I didn't think about why wasn't there a music program at Washington when I was there. I didn't think about that. And the reason was because I was still doing music, right? I had parents who were motivated and with it to send me to Casadero on their own and to find a private youth orchestra that I could apply to and get private lessons, and it didn't matter that there wasn't music, right? But it did, and that's going to be kind of my end point. It did matter for other kids, and it matters for us as a community. So 94 comes around, and I walk into the jazz program at Berkeley High, and you know, even though I hadn't played saxophone very long, I wasn't very good. And I didn't get into anything. I was shocked for about 20 minutes. And then I realized, okay, here's my new challenge. I need to work really hard. And it wasn't any teacher that was telling me that. It was the music that was telling me that. It was the other kids who could play better than I was that was telling me that. It was showing up at the high school at 6 a.m. and other jazz kids were already there practicing Charlie Parker licks. 6 a.m. It's like, if you show up to school and somebody's already practiced for an hour before you got there and it's 6 a.m., it's telling you, okay, there's more work to be done. And that, I think that's what music can do. It can do so many things that are hard for me to describe in words. It's not really what I'm used to doing. I'm used to just playing and feeling some of all of this every time I play. So I worked hard, and I got to meet a lot of great musicians. By the end of high school, let me go back to 94. At that time, there was a huge vote for the BSEP to include music this time, and it passed also. But there was about a year delay in the funds going, so there was a problem. How do we keep music going in 94, 95 until this vote that passed could fund the program? And it was three parents that took it on themselves to reach out to the community and start raising $300,000 for the 94, 95 program. And it was big and small things. It was a person going up to the board and saying, hey, can you approve the music program? We'll get the money to you later. And the board saying, yeah, we can do that. It was the faith that this was going to work. And then it was big things like the Grateful Dead saying, we'll do a benefit concert for the Berkeley Music Schools. This is the shirt I'm wearing today from that. We'll play the community theater. We'll give all the proceeds to the school. And it was more than that. It was Bill Graham and the stagehands and the unions also donating all their money to the schools. It was a complete outpouring. It was individuals saying, oh, you need money? Here's a $50,000 check. Because they could do it. And another person, here's a check. I don't want to be named. So big and small, the community valued music. And so why did they value it? Well, we'll get to that. So I end my Berkeley High experience in Europe at the North Sea Jazz Festival, talking with Wynton Marsalis about what's the best trumpet and what conservatory should I go to, and got my first chair in the big band. But the other thing that I learned in 12th grade is that even when you work really hard, you don't get everything. That year, there was one combo at Berkeley High, and a really great saxophonist who's gone on to do great things by the name of Dana Stevens, he arrived for that last year and rightfully got the one saxophone spot for that combo. Here was another, as Duke Ellington says, every problem is an opportunity. That heartbreak of not getting that spot after 4 years for me created in me a desire to do something about it. And I was able that year to start a second combo. And in that second combo, I think since then, the Berkeley High has two or three combos now. But it was a realization that there was enough talent and enough people wanting to do it that there shouldn't just be one combo. But how, as a 17-year-old, do you think, oh, this isn't right, I'm going to fix it? Well, it's the same way that as a 12-year-old, when I'm practicing Mozart or whatever, it's not right, how do I fix it? It's the same skills, I think, that I learned as a musician that helped me when things weren't right outside of music. And that's one of my points of why we need music education. All right, so moving on. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to talk for this long, but I think I'll be okay. Thanks for your patience. I'm surprised that my students are still here. After they played, they were doing what I would do when I was their age, you know, just be out there talking. But if you went out, as an aside, if you go outside and listen to musicians after they play, what do you think they're talking about? They're talking about everything that just happened. They're analyzing it. They're evaluating it. They're using all of these skills that we want young people to do, whether it's with music or whatever, or how they treat their parents. You want kids to do that. And I think music really helps kids reflect and process and do something that a lot of times we're not trained to do in a schoolroom, right? Where you're filling in bubbles and learning how to master standardized testing. Now I'm in 12th grade and I got into UCLA. I guess the point of that, though, is I didn't get into UCLA. I sent my application and they're like, thank you. You know, I was waiting for the big packet and I got that little thin envelope and I was like, I don't even want to open it. Thank you. We appreciate you applying, but because of the large number of qualified applicants, you know. But then I auditioned at UCLA's music department, and I was accepted through their music department. So I think that's one point for anybody listening for colleges, and one point for music. There's more than one way to achieve your goals, and music has always kind of helped me when I've hit a roadblock. So I got to go to UCLA through the music department, not through my transcripts. My wife was looking at my high school grades when we were cleaning out storage one day, and she said, you took a lot of really hard math classes in high school. I'm like, yeah, I did. And you didn't do very well. I was like, all right, so UCLA. At UCLA, I think that's a big thing. I think the other big thing I learned was, as a 12th grader, looking at how much it would cost to go to music conservatories versus the UC system was a huge lesson in fiscal responsibility. I tried really hard to convince my dad that a jazz musician can pay off $100,000 in student loans, but I couldn't convince him that was true. Now, I think the conservatories are great. I think that they provide a wonderful community, and I think the way that you should go to them is if you can afford it, or if you get a scholarship. So some of the same guys I was playing with got full scholarships. And some of them, you'll know their names now because they've done really well from themselves. They have Blue Note recording contracts, and they're doing really wonderful things. But I also know a lot of people who didn't go to the conservatory and are doing the same thing. So that's one important point I felt I wanted to share. You don't have to go into debt to achieve your dreams. All right, moving on. I want to kind of wrap this up and take some questions if I can. I haven't talked so much about being a teacher, so I guess I'll do that now. After college, I realized that I didn't want to be on the road. I didn't want to sleep on friends' couches. I wanted some stability. It fit my personality. And at UCLA, they had a teacher training program that I participated in and really started digging it. I just thought it was a lot of fun, and that's what I went into. and my first college ended, and rent was due the next month. And so I said, okay, I'll be a substitute teacher because that's probably the easiest job in the world. And I think I'll, you know, just do it wherever I can get a job. So I walk into a high school in Inglewood, California, and I'm going to be a history teacher for the first time in my life. And the teacher was, you could tell this teacher was an amazing teacher. I mean, the whole room was just covered in writing, and I was inspired. I was reading it, and I had all these fancy instructions on exactly what I was supposed to do. And I start, I say, all right, class, we're going to do this. We're gonna do it. And this kid stands up and says, hey, mister, there's a newspaper there. Why don't you read it? You're going to get paid either way. What do you say to that? I just went home with a headache. So I got better at teaching after a while. I went to New York, and I got to teach in the South Bronx. And my first day with kindergartners was a little bit different. Nobody asked me to read the newspaper. Instead, the kids came in, and they looked at me, and then they left the room, and they started running around the auditorium. One kid got on the stage and decided to dance and proceed to remove all of their clothing. At that point, a parent came in and helpfully suggested that I not allow them to do that, which I tried very hard to stop. So I should just stop teaching, right? I mean, gosh, these disasters are happening. But, you know, when I would play a jazz concert and I missed a note or didn't come in, you learn from music that you're going to make mistakes, that things don't just happen right away. And I don't think I was too hard on myself because of it. I just realized that it was a process and that I was going to keep working at it. And finally, I get back to where we are now in Berkeley. After 5 years and really cool experiences, I worked at an international high school. I was a founding member. I got to bring Carnegie Hall into the classroom. I got to bring guest artists from around the world to my students who were newcomers to the United States. Some of those students knew the artists from their home country, and it was just wonderful. But home was back here on the West Coast, where the weather is nice. And family was here, and it was time to come home. And when I came home, I was excited to see a job opening in the same schools that I grew up in Berkeley Music Department. And, well, why didn't music disappear in the Berkeley Music Department? Well, one answer that's not as obvious is because of the amazing people that I work with. If you walk into the music office, there's a buzz going on, and that buzz is just constant work at how can we make music exciting and accessible for all of our students. And just in the 6 years that I've been there, I've seen so much happen. We've started to play every year the national anthem at the Giants game. Every middle school has fantastic jazz musicians who get to play at Yoshi's and Freight and Salvage. The fifth graders and eighth graders get to go to Casadero. Wait, this all sounds familiar. I'm getting kind of to my point. So Berkeley is providing what my parents provided for me as an individual. Berkeley is providing now those same opportunities that I was lucky enough to have. But it's not just for those select few. Right now it's for everybody. Every fourth grader, every fifth grader gets to choose an instrument, gets to have the opportunity to succeed or fail, and I think that they learn a lot from either of those opportunities. And I think that music does so much for our brains. It does so much for our emotional health. I know that you guys have probably experienced that you can listen to something and it just totally fixes your frustrations for that moment that you're listening to it. I was trying to explore all the different ways that music helps your brain, And it's just so much. There's so many ways that it does that. And there's so many people that are more qualified than I am to talk about neuroscience and what it does. But what I take away from it is that it helps with spatial reasoning. It helps with cognition. It helps with social emotional connection. It helps with empathy. Somebody said a nice metaphor where if you're trying to take two notes and tune them into each other so that they sound like one, it's the same as when you're being empathetic towards somebody else where you are trying to connect how they're feeling and understand it. And I think that music does other things. It increases the overall climate of school culture. Attendance goes up. Graduation rates go up. All of this stuff is documented. And so back to the final question, why didn't music disappear in the Berklee schools? I actually didn't answer the number one straightforward answer. And if you've been to any of the concerts, you would have heard the answer within the first moments of a concert. We always, as music teachers, thank the Berklee homeowners and voters for the BSEP parcel tax that finally got underway in 94 and is the sole funding for K to 8th grade music. And it's, you know, my friend started a site called Your Mom is So Berklee, and then people on Facebook could end that phrase, you know, she made you memorize co-op's membership number at the age of four. Or, I like co-op. I still remember getting kefir and cinnamon rolls with my dad. But I think your mom is so Berklee, or your parents or your family are so Berklee, because they understand how art changes things. It changes the world. It's magic. It's the closest thing for me to magic. Trying to think if there's kind of a succinct way to end my talk. The people of the community of Berklee, for all of their idiosyncratic ways, for all of their no parking or how to park correctly on the sidewalk ways, their hearts are in the right place. They know that children need as much love and opportunity and understanding as possible, and they're willing to use their own money to get the kids those opportunities. And they're willing not to say it's just about my kid. They're willing to say it's about all the kids in the community. And I think that's why we thank them over and over again, because we really couldn't do it without the voters of Berklee making sure that our kids get maybe twice the funding that other kids get in other districts. There was a similar tax passed in Hayward, but it was for $5 million instead of $20 million, and Hayward's students double are in number. So there's a lot to be said for that. And back to why I didn't want to give my talk, I just feel like there's so many more qualified people in the district who know so much and are used to talking instead of playing a saxophone. But at the same time, what I really realized was this was an opportunity for me to encourage everybody who listens to this to please try to participate in the 2016 November election to renew the funding for music. And as I know my colleagues and myself, we're going to continue to try and give all of the opportunities that I was lucky enough to have as a kid to all of our students. Thank you. I think.
Online audiences that they're listening to Michael Hammond speak on why didn't music education disappear in Berklee. And it's time for questions and answers. Anybody have a first question? Michael? I'll start it. Tell your story about the man who kind of wanted to check into your saxophone and ask you how that was. when you were at school?
Okay. I remember two parts to this question. One was to answer what you asked, and the other was that I forgot to do something. Multitasking. In 96, I guess the jazz band was invited to play at the Democratic Convention in Oakland for President Clinton, and that was exciting to do that. And at the end of the gig, everybody kind of goes up to the stage to meet the president, and I was going to use this opportunity to show him that I didn't have a lot of money and that maybe he could help me out. So I got all the way up to the front with my Vito saxophone, which is not the highest quality saxophone. And sure enough, he shows up and says, "Oh, you're a saxophone player." And I shake his hand and say, "Yes, but it's a Vito because I'm poor." And without skipping a beat, he looks and he says, "Oh, but you have a really nice mouthpiece right on there." and that was the end of that that attempt. What I forgot to do is I wanted to invite actually some of the jazz combo members to come up and just tell what they think music has meant to them so far. In the voice of our soon-to-be high school students, would any of you like to come up and just talk? Or I can come to you. I think this is... There we go.
Well, music to me, stand up. I really liked being in the music program at the Berklee, in the BUSD music program, and it introduced me to jazz, just like Mr. Hammond was introduced to jazz, and I really love jazz, so I'm really thankful for that program. And yeah, it provided me with private lessons. I got to take private lessons, and there were we performed at Yoshi's, as he said, and it was fun. It was fun, most importantly. And yeah, so.
So the program also introduced me to the trumpet, which I've been playing since fourth grade, where we got to choose our instruments. And I mean, so I've heard jazz for most of my life. My dad's always playing jazz around in the living room or whatever, but it wasn't really important to me until I got to middle school and I joined the Longfellow Jazz Band and I started playing jazz. And that's when it kind of, I don't know, it made me think more about music, and it made me think even more about other kinds of music too, not only jazz, rap music, classical, rock, all that stuff. And I know it just kind of opened up everything in the music world for me, and it gave me, inspired me to do other stuff, like Casadero, like Mr. Hammond said. I've been there a few times, which is really fun, and I don't know, it just got me doing more stuff.
Let's see. So music in Berklee, I think it makes Berklee's public school system what it is, because there's just so many opportunities, so many musical opportunities for kids in the Berklee schools. So in fourth grade or in third grade, you start on the recorder and mallet instruments, and then you get to choose. So I chose trumpet. And then in fifth grade, I switched to the French horn. And then in sixth grade, I went to percussion because I had that choice. I had that opportunity. Also, the music program is just really good because of our teachers and because of our funding. I guess it's just made me like music more, and that's probably... made me into the person I am today. Looking forward to the Berklee I Jazz program, and Casadero has been really awesome. So, yeah.
Well, music for me, I didn't really like playing music very much until seventh grade. Yeah, and I used to play I started on clarinet and then saxophone, and then I switched between those two for a couple years. And then in seventh grade, there was a song where I had the opportunity to play cowbell, and I did. And then ever since then, I started playing drums, and I've really enjoyed playing drums. And yeah, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't gone to Berklee schools. Yeah.
I think the reason that the BUSD music program was so special to me is because it was so open to everyone. Anyone could do it. And I had come in seventh grade, so everyone already knew each other at my middle school. And I'd already been playing the bass, so I knew how to play, but I didn't know how many options there were for me. And I walked into school and into the orchestra and then the jazz program, and there were so many people who were just so happy and excited to have another musician, and so many kids who were just so nice, and all basically a lot of them and almost all of them have become my friends now. So it's a really great community that I'm really happy to be in.
I think the way they answer those questions just kind of shows you what thoughtful students we have. Thank you for stepping up and sharing that with us, students.
Hello. So my question, I guess, is a response to hearing the students speaking, and a theme that I kind of heard is what I affectionately called instrument ADD, and the need. I'm a musician myself, to touch every musical instrument in within like a square block distance. And I was just wondering if you could speak about what the Berklee Unified School District has in terms of instruments that are readily available. I know that the experiences I have is that a lot of times families, communities can't afford to rent instruments, and if that's part of what BUSD does, is providing those for the students.
Great question. Yes, so back to that parcel tax that I was telling you about, with those funds we were able to gather enough instruments for all of our students. And enough instruments means rooms full of instruments that all of my lovely colleagues and I take care of and check out and bring them back. So the students in fourth and fifth grade do not need to get their own instrument. At the beginning of fourth grade, we demo all of the instruments that are available, whether it's string instruments, woodwinds, brass, percussion, ukulele. And then we try to give first choice to all of our students. I'd say we give almost all of our students their first choice. We have enough instruments, and it's only because of this tax that we keep thanking people so much for.
I'm trying to think how to turn this into a question, so I'll just say, I feel that this has been wonderful, but so much a part of music education begins much earlier, begins in the preschool through third grade, with singing, dancing, and movement, and I think that that needs to be represented in all music programs, because as someone who teaches fourth grade recorder, but also teaches K through 3 music and movement and Dalcros and all that. So I'm hoping that is being addressed in Berklee schools, because that's where we're not only educating professional musicians like many of you will be, but also an audience, people that are comfortable in a cultural making music. So I'm wondering what's happening in Berklee with that.
Another great question. And sorry I talk so much about fourth grade on, because that's actually what I've been teaching, but we also have people trained in Kodai and Dalcros that are working with the younger grades and giving recorder, and we have dance teachers at many of our schools. And we're always trying to improve all of that from the beginning up to fourth grade. Just not my specialty area, but it's definitely on the minds of everybody on my team, and there's definitely opportunities for younger students to play music. We have At the 6 elementary schools I work at, every student starting in kindergarten has a music class. So it's there. But as I said, I don't know as much about it because I don't teach those grades.
Next question.
In such a well-supported program, what specific resource are you most grateful for, and what specific resource are your colleagues out of the district most jealous of?
I think people are our greatest resource. I think walking into a room with 15 music educators and being able to tackle whatever problems we're facing together as a team is huge. Because really, you know, we can make music with no instruments if we need to. So without that creative energy and force of the staff, I don't think we have anything. And I think maybe that's also what people might be jealous of in other districts. When I was working in New York, in a town of how many million people? 8 million more. I felt really all alone because I was starting music programs everywhere I got a job. But now I'm with a team of people who have so many wonderful ideas, and I think that's one of our biggest assets. And it does help to have the instruments that we need. That's huge too. But I think before that, the number one is the people.
Any other questions?
I guess I'm just curious. It sounds like the Berklee High Jazz Program particularly started before the BSEP, or its sort of cachet began, predated the parcel tax. And I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about the origins of the jazz program? Because I'm curious about sort of, you know, chicken or the egg. Did Berklee's love for jazz spawn this incredible program, and how that sort of infiltrated the rest of the schools?
Sure. There's probably people in this room who could explain the funding better than I can, but the high school is not funded with that parcel tax. And the way I understand it is there was key figures in our community that from 30, 40 years ago were huge jazz fans, and inviting jazz people like Duke Ellington to show up at the elementary schools and to kind of foster that love of the music. And I think that these individuals, and then also just the savvy of the Berklee voters. I think jazz is one of those art forms that we really celebrate in Berklee from where it comes from. And so I think it was just kind of the community and key people in key spots that were creating these opportunities for the kids. The kids, you know, Josh Redman's dad's a famous saxophone player, so they were also bringing in their own home culture too. So I think it was just a perfect environment to support that art form. And the idea of, you know, honoring each individual's voice, and I just think Berklee teaches you before technique that you matter, and that how you feel and what you want to say is important no matter what your age is. So I think in that kind of environment, you're free to take risks and you're free to try things, and I think that really helps jazz. I think that's what jazz is about.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how the Berklee Music Program, especially at the high school level, but throughout the program, introduces music modalities that aren't specifically Western. I mean, I know the jazz program really does a soup to nuts exploration of jazz, which includes Latin, but I'm also wondering if you could comment about how we bring in other cultural strains and musical traditions into the program.
Sure. I can comment from my own experience. I don't teach at the high school, but when I was there, we were exposed to a lot of Latin music. But there's so many, I forgot to mention just some of the community outreach that happens for the music teachers. So La Peña, this year I worked with musician from Puerto Rico who would come in and do drumming with some of my students and sit in the percussion section for my Latin pieces and help out with his expertise. So it's the kind of city where you can find experts from around the world who want to work with students. And so my experience is that is celebrated and honored, and that almost all the teachers that I work with, when that opportunity comes for somebody who's an expert from another part of the world to work with us and to show the kids another way of doing things, we take full advantage of that. And I know now the jazz director at Berkeley High has a big background in Latin jazz too, so I think that's what's also helping bring the kids to Cuba recently and doing things like that. People bring their specialty and their who they know. And that's the neat thing about being a musician is it's kind of a small community, so you really get to meet a lot of people from all over, and they want to educate our young people. So it's kind of, I think, how that happens. And then there's also people on our staff that are trained maybe in non-Western ways of teaching. So that becomes a choice at the fourth and fifth grade level. So we say, well, you could learn how to play this instrument, or you could learn how to play this one by, you know, some of the classes are really concentrating on reading music, while others are concentrating on learning by ear, with the hope that they will come together and that everybody will be exposed to those things. The teachers are constantly getting together and thinking of ways to make the music department more relevant to a wider range of students. It's always on our mind. One thing that we've done recently is the mariachi program at Longfellow, and I think it's just fantastic that we're going with that, and I think there's a lot of room to keep going with that, and it's something that we're going to keep trying to bring more and more of into our classrooms.